Looking all classy.
He's long and lean. You guys have both aged well.
Thanks,
for,
man.
For guys who are a few years out of school. Have a seat. Hey, Mitch. Justin Acker, good to see you.
Hi. Phil Elson, nice to meet you, Mitch.
Mr. Rasko, good to see you, sir. We're going to bring him in now. We'll do it now. Hold that break, Matt. We'll hit the break a little late. We welcome into the show Mitch Mustain, who I have actually seen speak at length in recent days because I finally saw the identity theft of Mitch Mustain, which very well done. My only complaint about it was, Basil and I have been talking loud a lot because the station's pretty heavily involved in the Hot Springs Film Festival where it's going to air this week, and I guess you're going to be down for that, right?
Right.
And I know they probably efforted it. I met the filmmaker. He did a great job. And getting Joe Shad was great, I thought, to get a national perspective on the thing because we're all sort of caught up in the hysteria of all that. But would have loved to have seen Gus talk about it, you know, Houston talk about it. I'm sure those are guys that are probably not that eager.
Yeah.
You know, your mother from behind the scenes was playing a prominent role, or at least we all sort of thought that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they approached all three of them, but anyway, yeah. I would have loved to have seen
all
that perspective.
Them were given the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, everybody declined for their own reasons. You know, I know, speaking for my mom, I know she didn't want to get into it, deal with it. You know, I think that side was presented, obviously, fairly well. Houston just straight turned it down. Then he commented in an article not too long ago. And then Gus is, you know, unsurprisingly, he I don't think he'll ever say anything on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a guy that, you know, and there was so much. He had his own drama going on. And he is, I would say, the picture of class. And things have worked out amazingly well for him. So, you know, by continuing to work hard, keeping his mouth shut, it's worked out well for him. What's your relationship like with Gus at this point?
It's good. Yeah, we talk fairly frequently. You know, usually when football season slows down a little bit, he kind of gets buried in it right now. But, yeah, it's been good. I've had an offer to go work with him and just haven't really felt that desire yet.
We sat here with Gene Chizik a couple of weeks ago. It was, and he had an interesting thing that he said, which was, there's no point in being bitter after things don't work out, because at the end of the day, if you are, you're the only one who's bitter.
Right.
You seem like a guy that's awfully well adjusted through all this and almost disaffected to a point that surprised me. I mean, you seem so okay with it that it just seems out of the ordinary. So where are you with it mentally when you think back on it? I know you don't seem like a guy that spends a lot of time thinking back on what went down there, but
yeah, you know, there was a time, you know, right when it happened and immediately following it, that was the way it was, and I went on with it and ended up moving off and having a whole new life to deal with. So it really was an issue then. I think later on it really started to kind of pop its head up a little bit and affect me a little more. And certainly as we did this documentary, it was the first time I'd really addressed a lot of it, most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of a bit, you know, the documentary, at least from my point of view, is a bit of a hodgepodge. You know, it was filmed over quite a long time, and so a lot of those thoughts and those remarks were very fresh. It was the first time I talked about them. So now, you know, being even a year or two removed from the documentary, you know, it's all behind. It is what it is, and I'm pretty well with it.
The one thing that's amazing is, you know, again, as we're a little removed from it now, is clearly there was communication issues. Clearly there was not a cohesion that you see in successful teams typically, but
right.
The level of success that those teams had despite all that is pretty remarkable when you think about
it. Yeah, it is,
it.
And I believe I mentioned part of that.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was in the documentary or in another source, but, yeah, you look at the guys we had that year from just on the offensive side, Louise, yeah. All our line, we had a very experienced offensive line, McFadden, Felix, Peyton, Monk. You know, the sky was the limit. We had Florida, you know, on the hook and let them off. And, you know, you really wonder what could it have been had it worked out as it should have. You know, had it been run professionally and as it should have been. And, you know, we'll never know. But, you know, there's certain elements that we see time and again that make you wonder.
What's your greatest disappointment with all that?
Well, that's hard to say. You know, there's a lot of it from beginning to end, but, you know, the biggest thing, I just wish it could have worked out how we all had planned on it. And, you know, it never works as you plan, but certainly nobody could have foreseen it ending how it did. And, you know, that is disappointing.
Anything you would have done differently after leaving Arkansas? Maybe, you know, I don't know what your anticipation was when you went to USC, but certainly there were a lot of programs that could have used a guy with your skill set.
Yeah, certainly. It's easy to look back and thought, well, I could have gone – you know, just about anywhere, played and moved on. You know, my idea then was that, you know, I'd seen one side of it, and I knew that, you know, being in a place you weren't, even if you're playing, it's easy to be unhappy. And you know, I knew I wanted to go somewhere where it'd be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, SC was going to be that place. They had John David Booty and Sanchez. and who knows who coming up at that point.
Right.
It was going to be a challenge. I knew that, but I wanted to go to a place where I knew, football was going to be the focus and winning was going to be the focus, and we were going to be developed and be a team.
So you go from a place where even if you're playing, it's not so much fun, to a place where even if you're not playing, it's still pretty fun.
Right. And I to this day, I think that's, for some people, everybody has kind of their own deal they're looking for. I remember talking to Broderick Green at the Rose Bowl. He did it backwards. He came to SC and then transferred back to Arkansas. And I remember talking to him on the sideline, and that was my comment to him. For him, he wanted to play, and it didn't really matter. He wanted to get on the field and get going, and Arkansas was a good opportunity for him. Coming back worked out for him. For me, that wasn't my focus. I wanted to be somewhere that was going to help develop me and give me a good opportunity.
Was the spotlight any different at USC? I mean, a giant city like that admittedly doesn't have an NFL team, but, the USC seemed to be the big pro team for fans down that way, but such a huge city, and then separated from the spotlight that you see in Arkansas where this is the one team.
Right. Yeah, Arkansas is very unique in that regard, even within the SEC. Still pretty unique. It doesn't really matter where you go. I mean, people that come to Arkansas, my friends that come back home with me, I mean, they always remark on it, how odd it is. It just kind of depends on how you look at it. For some people, that's really different. For us, we grow up here, and that's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the pressure is, I don't think, any less. It is different, though. The way you get the pressure, the people that are putting it on you. And the fact of the matter is there's just not quite the loyalty, I think, that you get here. I mean, here, everybody's flying the Razorback flag, the shirt, the hat, whatever it is, 24/7.
It's loyalty sometimes. It's always passion, though, and sometimes
Absolutely.
It's a little misdirected. Any bitterness at all? Because I know you dealt with some pretty ridiculous negativity from a very, I think it was a smaller sect. I think it was a minority, but there was a pretty negative, passionate group.
And a loud sect.
Well, you had the Malzahn group, you had the Nut group, you had your own group. I mean, there were so many different factions we were talking about earlier. In my job, it made it easy to open the phones every day, but it made it miserable, too. It sucked, and I can't imagine being part of that. Do you have any bitterness at all from what you endured through all that?
Not so much. I think people are going to go with what information they have. I didn't have to live in the vacuum like you guys did. You guys got it every day. I was able to pull away from it and kind of, ignore it if I chose to. It won't change what happened. And fans are always going to be vocal. It doesn't matter where you're at. Everybody was screaming for Lane Kiffin at Southern California 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
It just really doesn't matter. And now there's so many avenues for people to have their voice heard. That's just going to be the way it is. And I've met very few people who've been negative or critical in the past 7 years, 6 years since I left. Most people are very supportive. I think, they may not understand what happened. The situation was unique in itself. Regardless of what you talk about, so I think a lot of people are just more dumbfounded than anything.
Yeah, that was me. I wasn't definitely. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and
good
I knew
word
I,
to describe.
I knew I didn't like it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. You played this last season with San Jose in the Arena League. Are you under contract again to play this coming season? When does that start?
We begin the end of February. Games begin in the middle of March.
Okay. That's a unique atmosphere all its own.
That's very, I'd never seen an arena game until my first one.
Is that right?
And so I'm staying there. And it's one thing to practice in it. You've got guys that are just as fast, but the field's a quarter of the area. And it moves very, very quick. And I stood out there my first game. We were at San Antonio, and I was just kind of in shock. I was just sitting there watching. I was like, I have no idea what's going on right now. It took a while, but I was fortunate to have some older guys that are very good at the game, very experienced, and I spent a lot of time. We all lived in the same apartment complex and spent a lot of time with me, and so the game progressively slowed down, made a start. We ended up winning that one, and by the end of the year, I was very comfortable in the game. Going back to the big field, now I had a chance to go back during our bye week and work out with some guys on the big field, and it seems so slow now, which is nice.
Yeah.
I think if I ever get a chance to get back on the big field, it'd be a good transition.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the case. Now, I know you took a crack at baseball, too. How did the arena opportunity come about?
That was something that it just came back. I hadn't played baseball in a long time. I'd always kind of wondered if I should get back into that and just dabble with it. And I had a buddy of mine that threw out, well, hey, I can get you a tryout. And, it's one of those things you just think it's talk. I was like, all right, whatever. And then he called me out of the blue one day and said, hey, you can be here next week. He called me on a Friday, said he could be here next Friday. Can you be ready? I hadn't thrown a ball at baseball in 8 years. I thought, all right, yeah, I'll be ready. So I went out and threw with a buddy of mine on Tuesday, and then Friday came, and I don't know if I could have thrown a better bullpen. And I hadn't thrown a better one since. Ended up getting signed.
Yeah.
And had a good year, a pretty good year.
Yeah.
But it was hell on my arm. on my body, really. It's I have a whole new respect for those guys, the travel, the hours they keep, the workouts. They're always running, throwing. And so, you know, I kind of had to make it a choice. You know, I was a 24-year-old rookie free agent, and I was, you know, I was missing football at that point. It was kind of a good – it was good for me to get out of it for a year. But I was missing it, and I knew that if I went back to baseball and ended up tearing up my elbow or something, you know, I'd end up missing 2 years, and by that point, everything would kind of be over.
Were you in the Appy League or one of the single-A leagues?
I was in the Appy League. That was a rookie ball league,
sure.
And then I went up to A-ball with Kannapolis.
You could not find a bigger contrast between playing quarterback at Arkansas and USC and then going and playing in the Appy League.
Yeah. That's not a joke. It was a good time. Played with Pete Rose Jr. He was our manager. You know, great guy. So got to learn a lot. Had a great time. Did fairly well. Moved up. And at the end of the day, I didn't feel like I should, you know, was in a position to risk injury in the end of my career at that point.
I had a long talk with somebody one day. Then they were explaining to me some of the advantages maybe of working with Coach Malzahn, and whether it was at the high school level or on to the college level, and some of the stuff that maybe he made easier for quarterbacks. Obviously, you enjoyed your best success under him. Can you talk about the relationship there and what he does as a coach and an offensive mind when working, I guess, in preparation, but also on game day and in the middle of a game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the offense is, you know, I say this and then certainly not derogatory, but very simple. I mean, he has reduced it to its simplest form and makes it easy for guys. And he can kind of plug and play. He can pull guys anywhere, and he's very good at utilizing who he has. And I think that's important. You know, I think very good coaches can do that. And that offense allows that. You know, he can plug in Cam Newton. He can take a guy that's more of a pocket passer like I was, and he can make it work. You know, on game day, I mean, it's just the rest of it, I think, comes down to Malzahn himself. I mean, I would use the word obsessed with it, but he's possessed by it. If you've ever watched him, his focus, I mean, there's nothing else around when he's doing this. It doesn't matter if he's working on his call sheet for that night or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on it. And so he demands a lot of his quarterbacks, more than anybody else. I mean, he will be brutal on them. But at the end of the day, it makes it easier. You know what you're getting all the time. He's very consistent. And at the end of the day, he's going to support his quarterback and help him make the right decisions.
What's I know you're probably getting ready for this next season and excited about that, but what long term, what do you think for you? Is coaching on your plate, or is that something you think you'd get away from football after your career's over?
I don't know.
Playing career?
You know, like I said, I've had the question come up. I'm just not in a position right now or a form where I want to do it. I believe you did it for a while, didn't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah, I was at Texas Tech the past year. It was like your experience in baseball, it opened my eyes a little bit. You know, you have a passion for something, and then you go try and test your passion in a different level. And it's different when your helmet's off and you got a headset on. But it was fun. I mean, if you get a chance, I'd recommend you. I mean, I'd say try it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have some arena money to be able to live with. Because I know Matt was living in a dining room on an air mattress at one point.
Well,
so
I don't think that's uncommon. You know, I saw the whole time I was at SC, our GAs, I mean, they just worked them.
Yep.
And the guys put in their hours. I mean, it's not a free pass at it by any means. These guys were there later than anybody else. They, you know, constantly, if anything went wrong, it was coming back to them.
Yep.
You know, the night before game, they were up all night working on make sure the play sheet was perfect. Mm-hmm. Everything we had was perfect, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think I'm in a position to want that right now. I just got out of college, and I don't really want to dive back into it.
Your mind's got to be right for something like
right,
that.
Right, absolutely. It's one of those things that, you know, once you're in it, it very few guys get out of it. You know, most of those guys get in it, and they grind it out, and they may be miserable, but it's what they do. And so,
you're absolutely,
you know,
right.
I've got a lot of options, a lot of interest right now, and I'm going to exhaust them. And you know, maybe within the next couple of years, if we'll see where I'm at, I'll reassess and kind of go a separate route.
What'd you study at Arkansas?
At Arkansas, I studied, I guess, really nothing, just general studies.
I studied NFL quarterbacking.
I finished 1 year.
When you went to USC, what was your major?
I graduated with international relations. I did foreign policy and security. So I've always been interested in either mostly defense work, defense policy, or even state work, you know, State Department diplomacy.
Light stuff.
That's pretty highbrow, especially for a guy that,
I don't know about that.
Yeah. One last thing, we'll let you go. You know, I'm watching the documentary, and I do recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it, and certainly people who have not. You know, I think people probably from the outside looking in who did not live in this state during that time are going to find it especially fascinating. A lot of it I was, you know, kind of familiar with from a story standpoint. But you seemed, like I said, a little bit disconnected and maybe not real passionate about football at that point. I guess I was surprised to see that you had caught on with an arena team and that you wanted to get back in there and play again.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I think the baseball was the best thing to happen to me. Went to Canton. This part got cut out of the documentary, but I told Matt at one part in filming, you know, the worst thing, he was asking about, you know, not being picked up by an NFL team in 2011 and ended up going to Canada, and that was the year they had the lockout. And I told him the best thing that ever happened was not getting picked up at that point because, I mean, I was really just burnt on it. You know, I went to Canada, absolutely hated it, and was happy to get out of that. Going to baseball was great because it allowed me to refocus, to get out of the game, to go do something completely different for, you know, half a year, and not even really deal with football at all. And I think it would have been detrimental more so had I been picked up in 2011 with the state of mind I had at that point, which was just being kind of over the game, having a couple nagging injuries that I needed to get fixed. Going to the White Sox fixed a lot of that, you know, reset my mind, got my body back, my shoulder, my arms healthier than it ever has been. So it was a good deal for me, and you know, I kind of knew coming out of that, okay, I went back in the game. I'm ready to go for it, and this past year was good, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Good. Good luck to you, man. We appreciate it. I'm glad, glad things are going well for you.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing your speech to the Little Rock Touchdown Club. That's Mitch Mustang, Justin Akre, Phil Elson, and Matt Harris. We'll all be back from the Little Rock Touchdown Club.